Today, we have an interview. It's future ready. It's with a woman named Margaret Byfield. She's going to talk about land rights, property rights, and how it is the federal government and maybe even China is looking to take away what you and I own. This is one of those conversations you do not want to miss, and it is all unfiltered.
Dennis Michael Lynch gives you his word, and he will never let you down. He will always fight for America.
The only one who really puts his money where his mouth is Dennis Michael Lynch.
Hello, I'm Dennis Michael Lynch, and I thank you for joining me today. A few weeks ago, a few months ago, my God, time is going by so quickly. We started this new thing called Future Ready here in our new studio, and it is set up in such a way to where we want to have interviews that are compelling for you to listen to, in the sense that we take things that have happened today and yesterday, we look at them and say, what is it going to look like for us tomorrow? How do we become future ready? We've talked about AI, we've talked about voting and balloting, we've talked about a bunch of stuff. Today, we're going to talk about land rights. Now, on the surface, land rights is something that sounds boring. Right? Oh my God. Have you ever been in a closing before? It's like you just want to get done, get your keys to your house and all the other different paperwork that's all in between easements and all this other stuff. You're like, all right, where do I sign? Well, think about your greatest asset. And I'm not talking about your family and your children. What's the greatest asset you have? What's the greatest asset anybody has? Most Americans would say their home, their property. It's their most valuable asset. Well, we're going to talk to a woman today. Her name is Margaret Byfield. She knows what it's like to lose your property to the federal government. She knows what it's like to lose your business and lose your money to the federal government. And this is going to be one of those stories that you're just going to sit back, you're going to listen to, and at the end, I hope, hopefully, you're going to say, man, we've got to make some changes here in the United States or else we're in a lot of trouble. Before I bring in Margaret Byfield, who is, by the way, an active person fighting for land property rights, and you'll get her website at the end of the interview. I'm going to start this program off with an 8 minute. It's 8 minutes, but it's really interesting. I'm going to take you back in time. This is my appearance with Megyn Kelly on Fox News when I found myself in the middle of filming a major land rights, property rights conflict between the Bureau of Land Management, which we are going to talk about extensively here today, and the Bundy family, a ranching family that had had property in their name for over 100 years. It all unfolded in Nevada. And here is my appearance as a reminder to you of what took place in Bunkersville back in 2014. Here we go. Ryan, play the clip.
For so many, this fight had little to do with animals and everything to do with freedom. Cliven Bundy did not recognize that this was, in fact, federal land. He did not believe he had to pay those fees that the courts told him he had to pay, because he said the feds own over 80% of Nevada, and his family had been there long before they claimed that ownership. Tonight, we have this exclusive new look inside of this fight.
Today is the greatest day in my lifetime. I've lived 65 years. Government just keep taking more and more, more federal government. Today, that's for the free men of America right there, for them soldiers that died and fought for it.
This right here is the best thing I've seen, the people taking their country back.
They said they were going to tax him more, and he said, nope, I'm not selling and I'm not paying you. It's taxation without representation.
Basically what they've done with this federal government law enforcement here, we've been paying their way to come here and point guns at these free people.
That became a big part of the story, the tactics used by the feds. Joining us now, documentary filmmaker Dennis Michael Lynch, who was right in the thick of things, bringing us this extraordinary video we've been showing you, facing down some of these armed officers himself, and even working to bring about a peaceful resolution. Wait until you see some more of these clips. We're about to show them. Dennis, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Megan, for covering the story.
So that turned out to be, I mean, legally, the feds had Cliven Bundy dead to rights. That's my opinion as a lawyer. Two courts took a hard look at it and said, Mr. Bundy, you lose, you have to pay. But what Mr. Bundy said was, look, if that's the law is wrong. I don't recognize the federal government's right to tell me, get off this land or pay fees, because I've been here for a long, long time. And my answers have been here a long, long time. I'll pay to Nevada, but I'm not going to pay the federal government. So it came down to, for him, a matter of principle. He didn't think the law was right. You went out there. How tense was it?
Well, you know the kind of work I do. This was, I've never experienced anything like this.
Even along the southern border where you go?
I've looked at cartel in the face. This was different. This was different for a couple of reasons. Number one is, you know, I'm a New Yorker. You're not going to BS me. And when I went down there, before I'm going to put myself in harm's way, I had to understand who these Bundys were. If they were some kind of shysters, I was going to stand back. These people were willing to die on Saturday. They were willing to die. I heard it in their voices. I saw it in their eyes. And that's when I really got nervous, because you have Americans against Americans. And I'm seeing this as becoming the trend. And that's why, you know, we're standing there, and they're making a prayer before they go. They go into battle.
We have some of that. Let's just show the audience. This is clip number three of the prayer before they went to confront the agents.
As we go about this task, that we will be safe, and that we invoke thy power to defend us. We ask these things humbly in the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
And then we'll get some courage and walk up there and ask them to...
Go ahead.
It's amazing, because my heart is actually beating as I'm watching them. When they made that prayer, Megan, what I did was, they said, we're going to go as a group, and I ran ahead. I don't know why. Something in my head just said, you got to go.
This could end badly.
These people are going to start shooting at each other. So I went towards them. You have the video of that, too. And I just raised my hands up and I said, are you really going to shoot these
people? And I want to get to that. But the reason they were praying and the reason you were worried is they had been told that there were orders to shoot.
Yes.
That's also on camera. This is soundbite number two.
Mm-hmm.
Watch.
There's no reason for anybody to get hurt, to lose their lives on either side.
But it's a possibility.
They're just on the phone with Metro. Metro has the word to shoot on the people going up to get the cows right now.
So the mindset of those in that prayer circle and of those who are going to go confront the feds over what they believed, I guess, is a moral issue for them.
Yeah.
We're willing to put their lives on the line. We're willing to put the lives of federal agents trying to do their jobs on the line. I mean, you must have been somewhat fearful. They must have been as well.
Yeah, it was a situation that it's hard to describe to you in words, and you've got to see it. I can just tell you that I've never met anybody in my life who was willing to give their life because they didn't want to pay a tax or a fee. This is more than that.
It's about big government for some of these.
It's about
ranchers and militia. I mean,
see, the militia thing gets a little bit, it gets a little overcooked. There was also women and children there, and there were cowboys, and I don't mean cowboys like crazy cowboys. I mean, they were good cowboys, you know, the kind of guys you'd like to hang out with on a Friday night and have a beer with. And, you know, I'm the only guy who's not from the area, so I have no emotional attachment to this. And I'm telling you, I have nothing to gain from the Bundys.
Well, when I watch you make these videos, you don't normally become the news. You normally shoot the news. And yet I want to show our viewers what happened with you. And you found yourself as sort of a mediator of sorts in a moment here.
I'm tired of going to these things and watching Americans at war with each other. It's not the way it's supposed to be.
Watch it play out.
I'll put the camera down. Can I approach? I have no weapon. Are you really going to shoot these people if they move forward? Yes or no? If you know, you shoot. If you shoot me, you shoot. I got no gun. I'm asking you one question. Sir! I do not have a weapon! I'm from New York! May I approach so this doesn't end in bloodshed? What is wrong with you? Come on!
My wife isn't talking to me.
But I mean, the federal agents and the local agents who were there had to be fearful for their own lives as well, because this is a situation in which they've been sworn to uphold the law.
Yes.
And the law, according to two courts, was on their side. And what are we as a society if we don't abide by a rule of law? And I mean, I know people said that back in the 1960s, too, when we had Jim Crow laws in place, and others in this country said, we will rise up and we will change that law.
There are two important things I have to say before we go. Number one is that I was part of the crew that went over and was there when they were negotiating the deal. And as I'm walking by, one of the armed guys handed me a water. He could see I was so thirsty. And he says, please make sure when you're on TV that they know this. And what he was trying to say to me is that he did not want to have that gun pointed like that. Mm-hmm. Now, some people will say, well, he has the option to put it down. I can tell you a lot of those guys did not have their guns up.
Now, they worry about their own families.
Well, plus, they know that they're pointing at Americans. And number two is the BLM has selective management. Because as much as I do down at the border, Megan, the BLM owns property all along the border. So my contention is the Bundys will start paying a fee to them when they start taking a fee from the cartels who use that property to bring drugs into this country. Because I can tell you, I never see the M16s down on the border stopping the drugs and the terrorists and the day laborers coming through on BLM property. It's just an open door. But they're going to point M16s at our face to save some turtles and to collect a fee. This is a much bigger story than anybody's giving notice to. And I'm not going to sit here and make speculation what it is. I also want to say that I talked to the Bundys before I came on TV, and the rumors that are going on that the BLM is still there and they're planning an attack is all BS. Okay. They've kept to their word so far. The Bundys said they will contact me if something changes to that point. And, you know, for anybody who's going to think that these people are manipulative and just doing this about money, Megan, I look you in the eye and I know who you are. I look those people in the eye. They're for real. Mm-hmm. They're for real. Mm-hmm.
They say it's not over. The feds continue to want to make Mr. Bundy pay fees for the grazing that his cattle is doing.
I have to say something else.
Quickly.
Fox was the only truck in that parking lot. And that is disgusting because the entire country should know what's going on. And only you and Sean and the other people of Fox. I could not believe there were not network trucks there, just yours. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Kudos to you.
Well, at least for now, it's ended peacefully. Dennis, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it.
All right. Without further ado, I bring to you Margaret Byfield. I really appreciate you being here with me. You didn't get to see it, but we started off the program here with a video of an appearance I made. I used to make a lot of them, but an appearance I made on Fox News going back many years ago. I think it was 2014 when I was involved from just covering the news with a huge a conflict between the Bundy family and the Bureau of Land Management out in Nevada. It was all about property rights. Guns were blazing, AR-15s on the side of the Bundys and M16s on the side of the government. And I remember sitting there saying, wait a second, this is over grazing grazing cattle and turtles. It just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me that this was happening in America. But what happened at that given time is that I learned a lot, nowhere near what you know, and that's why we invited you on the show. I learned a lot about the BLM and property management rights and all this crazy stuff. So we brought you on today. So would you do me a favor? Would you explain to people your knowledge of this this topic and how you got involved and where you stand today?
Sure. Well, so I was raised on a ranch in central Nevada. And we bought that ranch in 1978, and which is a little bit before the Bundy time. And we actually, from the moment we bought that ranch, we were really came under the restrictions of the federal agencies, the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management. Let me set the scene a little bit for you. So our ranch in Nevada, central Nevada, it's really, if you put a pin on the map in the middle of Nevada, you'd be about where our ranch house sat. We were 60 miles from the nearest town, which was Tonopah, which, depending on how many mines were active in the area, was anywhere from 2,000 to 5,000 people. Very, very low population. To get to our ranch from Tonopah, half of that was dirt road. We had no pulled electricity just because we were so remote. And so we generated all our own electricity. We had a hydro plant. We had our own generator. In those days, you didn't even have a cell phone. Eventually, we were able to put in a satellite cell phone. But, you know, I grew up without TV and all of those great luxuries. But so just to give you a sense of how remote we were out there in the middle of really nowhere, bothering no one. But our ranch was a typical Nevada ranch. So we ran on 1,100 square miles. That's a combination of the private property. So we had 7,000 private deeded acres. The rest were the grazing allotments. And we owned all the water on those grazing allotments. So a little background is when the West was settled, It was settled really the same way the East was settled. So if you remember when the East was settled, people would go out and they would claim their 120 acres, 640 acre homestead, depending on where they were residing. And then they would own that property by putting it to beneficial use. So the West was settled the same way. What happened, however, is the progressive movement really got its start at the time the West was settled. And they had enough political control that when it came time for the states to come into statehood, the federal government decided they would retain ownership of that land. So you had these states and the Western states coming in not on equal footing with the other states. And that's why when you look at a map of the federal of the United States, you'll see that the Western states are already federalized. 50% of the land in the West is owned by the federal government. So in our state of Nevada, 87% of the land is owned by government. So that means if you have any kind of an operation and you're trying to make a living, your business partner is the federal government.
Right.
And so, you know, when the West was settled, there was a huge conflict between the settlers who were already there and the federal government, because they settled the area believing they were going to own that property and those use rights. So when the government made the decision not to do that, they really negotiated a deal and said, don't worry about this, because you will always have the right to graze these lands. So most of the federal lands in the West were set aside as multiple use lands, meaning that you could recreate on them, graze them, mine them, drill for oil on them, harvest the trees from them, all at the same time. The purpose for the federal land management agencies, U.S. Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management, was to manage all of those different uses so that they would always continue. And that was essential for the local governments, the local economy, to be able to support the schools, hospitals, you know, emergency services, utilities, roads, all of those things that the local governments provide. So that economic benefit is essential to those local governments. But that's how the West was settled. And that's why you end up with, we did, a ranch in Nevada in which the federal government owned the surface estate, but we owned the grazing right and the water right. Now, the reason they came after us is because our water, all the water that we owned, was gravity flow to Los Angeles, gravity flow to Las Vegas, two cities desperately needing water.
Okay.
So the Forest Service filed a claim over every one of our water rights on the Forest Service lands, and then used their regulatory power to run us out of business. Oh. So that's the environment I grew up in. And like I said, we bought the ranch in 1978. I think I was around 10 years old at the time, so I'm dating myself. But we fought them on the ground for 13 years.
And when you say, well, let me just stop you for one. Let me stop you for 1 second. When you say you fought them on the ground, what does that actually mean?
So when you're under the grazing permit system, which you have to be, I mean, that's the only legal way you can graze, even though you own the grazing right, you have to comply with their regulations. And part of that is their grazing permit system. So that system gives the federal government the ability to decide when we can go on the land with our cattle, when we must come off, and what any other management directives they may impose on the landowner, on the grazer. And so in our situation, the very first year that we were there, as I said, they filed over all of our water rights. And then our grazing season, so the summertime that we were allowed to be on the forest allotments, which were the allotments in the mountains that we grazed, it was a 105-day grazing period. In that very first year, in that 105-day period, we were served with 40 certified letters noticing us of violations of our grazing permit, and we had 70 visits from the Forest Service knocking on our door telling us that we were doing things wrong.
Did they fine you?
We didn't have time to do that much wrong.
Did they fine you? Did they subject you to fines?
They subjected us to everything.
Okay.
Everything from canceling our grazing permit to reducing our stocking numbers to reducing our on and off dates. They do it in a number of different ways. But let me give you an example of kind of our violations that they accused us of. One, they said we were not maintaining our drift fences up on Table Mountain. So Table Mountain, our ranch house sat at 7,000 foot elevation. Table Mountain was 12,000 foot elevation. And so only three trails up, it's wilderness, is very remote. And so it would take us a day to ride up, a day to ride across the top of the mountain to check the drift fence, and then a day to come back down. So they said we were not maintaining our drift fence. So Dad sends up, you know, a rider loaded with all of the fencing equipment, you know, pack horse with all the fencing equipment, day to go up. He rides the whole line of fence and comes back down and hands Dad a blue flag where the Forest Service had marked our violation. And Dad said, so what was wrong with the fence? And our hired man said, out of 25 miles, there was one staple missing. So a staple on a fence post is basically, you know, like your paper staple that you use just to hold up one wire on one fence post.
And so that was your, see,
one of those is not going to create a problem if you're missing it.
I mean, bottom line.
And then
line,
you have to ask, how did the staple go missing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it to me, anybody who's listening to this, it is simple. They were trying to find some kind of way to force you to basically just abandon, sell, or, you know, just go out of business. They didn't want you there.
That's exactly right.
So when you say you're fighting them on the ground, meaning, so I guess they would go up, they take a look and say, hey, this staple is missing out of this fence. I mean, you and your father and everybody else must have rolled their eyes and said, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. So I'm assuming your father went up and put a staple in.
Yeah, you know, when the hired hand was up there, he put the staple in it and cured our violation of the grazing permit. So when they accuse you of violating it, you usually have 10 days to cure that. You have to show that you made the effort to resolve that problem. Right. And if you don't, then they can do things like cancel your permit and do all these other things. So we went through basically 13 years of that. And we actually filed three cases against the Forest Service and the BLM. Between the two of them, we filed three cases where we challenged those charges they were laying against us and the cancellation of our permits and reductions and all of those things through the administrative appeals process. Here's something that most people don't understand about the administrative state is they have their assigned responsibility, which, you know, you understand the separation of powers, right, where we have the executive branch, we have the legislative and the judicial branch. And our founders were very deliberate about making sure those three things never came together, that there was never that consolidated power. Well, all of that is consolidated in the administrative agencies. They have to execute the law. So they enforce the law, which is, of course, charging us that we violated a grazing permit. But then they also do their own rulemaking. So Congress will write a law and then delegate to the agencies to basically write the details of how they're going to implement that. So they actually have legislative authority. Congress has delegated that to them. And then the third thing they have is they have their own administrative appeals process, meaning that if you challenge one of their rules and how they have put it in place, you have to go before one of their judges to cure that. So their own people are also judging whether or not you were correct or not. And so you have to go through that administrative appeals process. If they tell you at the end, hey, we still think that we were right and you were wrong, then you can actually get into a legitimate court and get into U.S. District Court. But what happened to us in all three cases was we got to the top of the process, which means you've been fighting them in that case for 3 to 4 years each time. And in the meantime, they have canceled your permit, so you're operating at, you know, not your full capacity. And you're paying, we paid over $100,000 for these three cases back in the 1970s and 80s. Mm-hmm. We'd get to the top and the Forest Service say, gee, we're sorry. We think we were wrong here. And so it would take the whole case away and we couldn't get into court. And then the next year, they just go back and do it all over again.
So that's what they're doing. They're basically
ground up and out.
Yeah, what they're doing is it is the biggest form of corruption and kangaroo sort of court style that you could imagine. You wouldn't even think something like that in America would happen. It's almost mafia-like in the sense that, all right, we're going to drain you of your money. You're going to fight these things for 3-4 years. We're going to try to exhaust you. We're going to try to exhaust your funds. We're going to try to make you give up. And then somebody like you, your dad, says, I'm not giving up. This is my property. These are my rights. I'm not backing out. And then basically what winds up happening is that you get to the top of the mountain, like you said, and said, hey, we made it all the way here. You tried to knock us down along the way. Yeah, we're hurting because we can't do our farming, our ranching like we should be. You're killing us in the pocketbook on both ends, but we're still standing. And then they pull it away from you and you're just basically left flabbergasted. And I mean, this is a David and Goliath. And unfortunately, you know, you're fighting against your own country. It just sounds so ass backwards. Meanwhile, you didn't hear this on the Fox News interview that we played before I got it on, but I ended that interview by saying, you know what? I'll listen to the government and their property rights BS and all the fines that they want to get. When they start charging the cartels for going in on the property that the BLM owns along the border, when they start charging the cartels for running fentanyl and running people across the BLM properties and they charge them fines, then I'll hear them about the fines they want to give to Americans. But until they do that, they really don't have a leg to stand on.
You know, that's a good analogy. They definitely pick and choose who they are going to run out of business and who they are going to allow to operate illegally on the federal lands. And you know what? I think that what's probably the most concerning about my family's story is that we are one of thousands.
Oh, yeah.
In other words, because my dad wrote a book called Storm Over Rangelands, and mom and dad were very aggressive at standing up to this. And ultimately, in 1991, we filed the first federal lands grazing takings case in the U.S. Court of Federal Claims because we wanted out of the administrative process. And so we decided we're going to go to that court and make this a property rights case and get to the question of what do we own and what don't we own on these federal lands. And so, I mean, we did it. We went through the system in the proper way. We complied with all the rules and regulations. We put the issue to the courts. We did not take an anarchist perspective on it. We believed in the American system, and we worked through that judicial system. And so because of that, you know, our story became, I think, pretty well known in the West. But we are one of thousands. There are so many landowners that have simply had to give up, go out of business, go do something else, because it is so difficult to fight the federal government and win when they own the land. And that is the key to all of this.
What happened with your family's property? What ultimately happened?
Well, we actually won the claims court case at the U.S. Court of Federal Claims. They awarded us $14.4 million.
Way to go.
And then the Forest Service appealed that, and the BLM appealed that to the U.S. District Court, Circuit Court in D.C. Unfortunately, our case got before three Eastern judges, and they had no understanding of federal lands laws, which are very complex. I mean, granted, they are very complex. But I think what they did was they just decided to punt. And they actually overturned our case, that decision, based on two technicalities, not on the property rights issues of who owns what out there, which is what we wanted to get to and ultimately resolve. But on this, they said we didn't have standing and the case wasn't ripe on a couple of the key issues. And that just basically was them punting and saying, boy, we don't understand this. It's too complex. If we actually sided with the landowners, it would overturn so much in the West. And I would say it would actually right the ship in the West if we had won that. But instead, they just punted. So we ended up with no compensation.
You didn't get the $14 million.
No. No compensation. And also, That also put everything into foreclosure. So we ended up losing the ranch. So there is no more, you know, ranch owned by us in the West, or by my, you know, my parents, what my parents had. And so, but, you know, so you look at that and you think, wow, how do you fight these? And I really think it really goes back to, we as Americans need to understand how important it is that we own our property. You know, that's the key thing that our founders did, which I don't think, well, we don't teach our kids this anymore. And that is, we have a great constitution. We have a very explicit Bill of Rights that the federal government cannot infringe upon, but so do other nations. There are other great constitutions. So what makes America different? Why in America has it been that we, the people, can actually control and run our government, unlike other nations that have similar constitutions? That is because the key thing the federal government did was they determined, or not the federal government, the founders did, was they knew if the people were going to be able to control the government and protect our liberties, the people would have to own the land. If the people own the land, the people can control the resources. They control the natural resource base of the nation. And the government cannot get so big and powerful by making their own living off of our lands. And they will have to listen to the people. The other thing that does is it preserves this independence and self-sufficiency of Americans. That means if we have the right to own land, we can build our own home. We can defend it. We can grow our own food if we need to. We can create a product and create a local economy that we can sell to others and generate our own wealth. That's what property does. Property gives every individual that ability to be independent. And then if the people have that, own that land, the people can limit the power of their government.
You know, the amazing thing here is, Margaret, when I listen to your story and I go back to the Bundy ranch story. Now, the Bundy ranch story happened, like I said, in 2014. And basically, at that point in Bunkerville, that sounds familiar to you? It's probably about an hour and a half north of Las Vegas. And I remember going out there, and like you said, it was in the middle of nowhere. I mean, God forbid your car broke down halfway there. I mean, you're on your own. And not to mention the fact it's like 120 degrees. You can't, if you don't have a bottle of water with you at every 2 seconds, you're going to wind up passing out. But I remember, you know, the Bundy's argument was, you know, you have forced every other rancher out of business. You have forced them out of their land, and they weren't going to leave because they had had that land for over 100 years. And I remember the government was using such a lame excuse that the cattle of the Bundys had gone onto the private property of the BLM and that it was disturbing an extinct tortoise. And they were confiscating cattle. They were actually killing cattle. And for people who don't understand how cattle works to a cattleman, you know, if you go up to somebody who has cattle and say, hey, how many head of cattle do you have? It's like asking somebody, hey, how much money do you have in the bank? It's a very private thing. And so, you know, the equivalent of you going up to somebody and ripping up $100 out of their wallet, you know, you're going up and you're ripping up a cow. You're killing a cattle. You're killing a cow. You're taking thousands of dollars away from somebody. So this is what they were doing to the Bundys. They tried to just push out. And then they ultimately make you look like you're some wild, crazy adventure person who's going to, you know, guns blazing, and that you want to have a fight against the government. The Bundys didn't want to have a fight against the government. They said, this is our land. If we have any fees, we'll pay them to Nevada, but we're not paying them to you, the federal government. And they just kept on trying to get them out. And like you, they fought it. And that's why I asked about how did you fight it on the ground? Because the Bundys were actually to the point where they said, okay, you want to fight? We're going to fight. We're going to die for our property. We're going to die for our land. And then once they won, because the Bundys won the battle, but they didn't win the war totally, because what the federal government did is that they started going after the Bundy sons in any sort of way they could. If they did as much as jaywalking, they were going to jail. And they were looking to put these guys away for the rest of their life. Seriously. I mean, I remember I testified in the federal, you know, in the federal court in there in Nevada. Going over what I saw. I said, I never saw a Bundy hold a gun, you know, but it didn't matter. They wanted them something terrible. Now, as far as I know, the Bundys still have that property today, and they're one of the last people standing. But I think it is absolutely grotesque that they would wind up waging war on Americans and waging war on people like you and your family, to where your dad and your mom, my God, that was their whole life. And they spent all that money, but they probably, I don't know, you probably remember this as a kid, the kitchen table conversations where your mom and dad probably were going back and forth of whether or not they wanted to spend the money. If they could spend the money, how much money did they have? And ultimately your parents just said, we've got to do the right thing. We've got to stand our ground. And they go at it. And here it is back in 1990s. You have to go through all of this for so long to ultimately get screwed by an appeals court who has absolutely no concern for you or anything that you do whatsoever. And they don't care that they just destroyed an American family. Kudos to you for standing up, and kudos to your family for standing up. What do you do today? I mean, am I right in saying that today you're basically taking an active role to try to help other people fight the same sort of thing?
Yeah. So our organization, American Stewards of Liberty, that's really what we do. We're a property rights organization. And, you know, that's if there's one good thing that comes out of the Hage case, I think it's that they created a few warriors.
Yes.
Warriors with, I think, a level of expertise that really can see the big picture of what's going on. And so we have been really active on the local issues to national issues where property rights are being infringed upon in America. The key one that we've been focused on for the last few years since Biden was put in office is the 30 by 30 agenda. And that is the international agenda to permanently protect 30% of our land and ocean, meaning permanently no human use. And so, you know, where I already told you that, you know, or we talked earlier about how much land the federal government already owns, they say only 12% of the land in America is permanently protected at the level it seeks for another 30, for the total of 30 by 2030. So we're not talking about just the federal lands like what we grazed on. We're talking about land that is really locked down. And what makes up that 12% are national parks, wilderness areas, and conservation easements on private land. Those are the permanently protected main categories that they are seeking to cover the rest, at least 30% of America in by 2030. So it's really, those kind of lands are so limited in the kind of production and flexibility they have to use the lands for other purposes. And so it really comes from this concept of the lands that human is a cancer. Humans are cancer on the earth. You know this philosophy. And therefore, we have to limit the number of humans, and we have to set aside at least 30% of the world, 30% of the earth, exclusive to natural habitats with no human use. It's a very, it's a crazy idea, but it has a lot of legs. If you've been following what's been going on in the European nation with the farmers, like in the Netherlands, you know, the farmer protests that are going on, that's because they have been under something called Natura 2000, which is the equivalent of 30 by 30. It's just a good 20 years ahead of what Biden is trying to do in our country. And so we can look to what's going on there and see that we will be there very shortly if we don't shut down this agenda.
I have two questions for you. I mean, obviously Biden and all of his ilk, if they could, they would eliminate everything that is what we actually need in order to live. And they think that somehow we're just going to be able to walk outside and the sun is going to provide everything. And in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to block that at some point too. But when Trump was in office, did you see these agencies, the forest ages, you know, the foresters and the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, did you see them ease up a little bit, or were they still running on what some people would consider a radical agenda?
Yes and no. I think that what you will find is it's very, very difficult to actually get control of the administrative state. And Trump and his people tried, I think, very well to do that. You know, in the Department of Interior, which then oversees Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and National Park Service, you know, basically the majority landowners in America, federal landowners in America, David Bernhardt, was the Secretary of Interior, and he did some really good things that would reverse all of these policies. However, getting that to trickle down to the actual level where, you know, people are grazing and mining and all of that was very, very difficult to do because the administrative state and the environmentalists inside of our agencies are so entrenched. It's very difficult to dig them out. He wrote a great book called You Report to Me, and he explains all of the difficulties of trying to get the president's policies put in place through the administrative agencies and how many roadblocks there are. It's a great expose on the administrative state. But so, you know, in some ways you saw some relief. I think mostly you didn't see these radical policies being pushed from the top down. But as far as anything really changing on the ground, not a whole lot, I think, can really change. And let me also tell you that when we went through our experience on the ranch, so we bought it in 1978, Carter was in office. He was the president.
Right.
But through most of the issues and the problems that we faced with the federal agencies, where they were cutting our permits and doing all that, was during the Reagan-Bush years.
Wow.
And we had good people at the top. But it is so, the administrative state has so much power, and not just in the federal land management agencies. I think it goes across the board in all the agencies across America. It's something Congress has to do. I know it's something that Representative Hageman out of Wyoming, you'll hear her talk about this a lot. She's a land attorney. She understands this. But she talks about how Congress has to get back those delegated powers that we've given to the administrative agencies in order to get control of this administrative state again.
The second question, and maybe it's a little bit out there, maybe it's just a little bit too much conspiracy theory or watching Netflix movies, but it's a concern for many people. I'll drag it down into the regular every person's life, so this way they could kind of get a better grasp of it, because not all of our listeners are from the West Coast, obviously. So people who are on the East Coast, especially those who live in metropolitans, are like, what's she talking about? Because they're not familiar. I mean, I know the first time I went out to Nevada and Utah, I'm like, where are the people? You know, and so you're driving through federal land. But that said, tomorrow, if I stop paying my mortgage, eventually I'm going to wind up getting a notice that says I'm going to go to foreclosure. And if I don't still continue to pay it, the bank is going to wind up seizing my asset, which is the house. And then they're going to be able to sell it. And because they got the first hold on it, and I'm basically going to lose my property, and they're going to sell it off to the highest bidder. And the bank is obviously going to try to get whole. Well, if you take that little tiny story, which everybody's familiar with, that's why we all panic at the beginning of the month to make sure we can make the mortgage. What happens if you do that on a much larger scale? What happens if you're borrowing money from China at a rate that is just so unbelievable you can never, ever pay it back? And at some point in time, somebody decides, I don't want to pay the Chinese anymore. Will the Chinese actually have the right to come in and say, okay, well, guess what? Federal lands, you owe us money. You haven't given us the money. We want to take your federal land. And now it's going to be Chinese-owned land. Is that, I don't know, is there anything in the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, any law that we've got anywhere that protects us from foreigners being able to confiscate property because we didn't pay back our loans?
Well, I think that's a really astute question. And we do have to understand that our federal lands are the collateral base for our debt.
There you go.
And so that's one reason why they're pushing 30 by 30 right now. Because they need to put more land in protected status so that it increases that collateral base. The other thing that they did was they they're in the process of doing, and this is another agenda that we fought and fortunately stopped. We had 3 months to stop it, and we did. But they've done something else. They're trying to create something called natural asset companies on the private sector, and that's what we got stopped, where they actually would quantify and monetize natural processes and something they call ecosystem services that come off the lands. So ecosystem services are things like pollinization, photosynthesis, clean air, things that nobody has a right to own because they belong to everybody and everybody must have to live. That's why they have never been monetized before. But they are trying to monetize these for the purpose of, there's two reasons. Number one, what they tried to do with creating the natural asset companies is a group called Intrinsic Exchange Group partnered with the New York Stock Exchange. The New York Stock Exchange was a partner in Intrinsic Exchange to create a new investment vehicle on the New York Stock Exchange called the Natural Asset Companies, where they would enroll these ecosystem services into this new investment vehicle, monetize these processes for the first time, put a dollar amount on them, which means they also would then, whoever held those, would own those. So somebody could own the air I breathe and somebody could own the air you breathe.
Good Lord.
And then put them as an investment vehicle so anybody could invest in them, including China sovereign wealth funds.
There you go.
BlackRock, mm-hmm. Bill Gates. And this was really the scheme and the purpose for 30 by 30. 30 by 30 is to clear Americans off the land. It's to erode the people's, the middle class's property rights. It's to erode them, the small landowner, erode their rights so that they can put those lands in this protected status in these natural asset companies and the world elites would profit off of those. The same people pushing the climate crisis agenda, pushing 30 by 30, would be the ones who would ultimately profit from these ecosystem services. Fortunately, and you know, knowing that the foreign entities can invest in these, it would have been so easy for China to get control of a NAC just simply by investing in it, and then making sure that none of the resources that were in that NAC, none of the lands, were actually developed. So no mining, no oil and gas, which was one of the requirements of a NAC. They had to be managed sustainably. No oil and gas, no mining could occur on the lands. Own that. Prohibit us from utilizing those resources while they own them and while they increase their world dominance by decreasing ours because they have limited our ability to use our own resources. As one person said, this was the equivalent of bringing America to its knees without a fight.
Oh, absolutely.
And fortunately, we got that rule stopped, but we only had 3 months to do that. But the federal government is doing something very similar. They're creating natural capital accounts where they are attempting to place, to quantify and monetize these ecosystem services, remember photosynthesis, pollinization, clean air, and put them on the federal balance sheet to increase our collateral base. So essentially, they are making up assets in order to inflate the value so that they can continue to increase the debt. So how China would actually get control of the resources, I think we've already seen a few ways that that's happened. In other words, when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, there was a lot of controversy over her action to give Chinese-owned companies the rights to mine uranium in some protected areas in Arizona. So it may not be the direct, you know, where China comes in and they simply just take over our assets. Mm-hmm. I think our federal government is going to be complicit in that if that occurs. But that's how I see that debt being paid.
Margaret, you know, when you take a look at what's happening in America in general, and you look at how our adversaries look at us from afar, they have recognized very clearly that America and Americans have gotten, let's just say, fat and lazy. And we're losing our country right at the tip of our nose. We're watching it every single day. I mean, China realizes that our weakness is our own people at this point. You said something incredible at the beginning of this interview. You said, we're not teaching our children anything about property rights. Well, geez, Margaret, I'll take that a little further. We're not teaching them anything about mathematics, science, technology, engineering. We're teaching them about, you know, the different colors of flags that don't belong in a classroom. We're teaching them about how it is that America is such a horrible place. And meanwhile, we're allowing all these people to come in through our borders by the multi-millions per year. They're all going to wind up having children. They're all going to automatically become American citizens. We've got Chinese coming through the border at rates that are just unbelievable, neck-breaking. And so eventually what's going to happen is the plan that you've heard from China and the same plan from Muslim Brotherhood. And this was revealed in an FBI case, I think it was called the Holy Land case back in the early 2000s. And that is, the doctrine is, you don't have to take America over by going to war. You don't have to break into any buildings and steal anything. You don't have to drive airplanes into the biggest buildings. You don't have to shoot a single gun. You just take it over from within. And so as these people come into this country and they continue to infiltrate our government, our education system, our universities, the Chinese are buying, my goodness, how many businesses that are traded on the stock exchange do the Chinese have a major ownership in? They're buying land faster than any other foreign entity that there is. I mean, if you look at this, they are slowly but surely, you could even put TikTok in there, that they are poisoning our children's brains. When you look at what TikTok in America looks like, we're being taught all this radical stuff. When you look at TikTok, what the kids are learning over in China, on the TikTok version that's in Chinese, they're learning all the things that are essential in order to be able to compete in the world. They are breaking us down and we're letting it happen. We know who's winning Dancing with the Stars, but we certainly don't know who's representing us in Congress. And slowly but surely, this country is just losing its foundation. It's people like you who are standing up and fighting and trying to educate people on what is actually happening that I feel may be our last stand. With that being said, last word here goes to you. What would you say to the people listening, what they need to know other than what you've already told them, and how it is that they could learn more about what they need to know through your website or your organization?
Well, I think the key thing to understand is how important property rights are to our liberty. And, you know, there's a couple ways that you can be sure about that. Number one, Karl Marx defined socialism as the abolishment of private property. In other words, if people can own things, they can control their government. And that's what they're trying to abolish. The other way to say that, which is actually what my dad said 30 plus years ago, is either you have the right to own property or you are property.
Oh, good point.
And so fundamental to fighting all of these agendas, it all comes down to whether or not the American people are going to control their government or not. And the key to doing that is making sure that we own the property. And that's why they are coming after our property through all these conservation programs and telling us there's climate change and telling us we're, you know, mismanaging our lands. Therefore, the government must come in, or the Environmental Land Trust must come in and do this for you. And we need to push back on that. When you hear about conservation programs, what I want people to do is I want the hair to start standing up on the back of their neck, because that is the propaganda they're using to get control of our lands and therefore to get control of the people. And it's only a step away from the Chinese government or the Russian or any of our adversaries to come in and get control of us if they can get control of our land. And so that's really where, you know, when you break it all down, there's so many fronts we have to fight on. I mean, have to fight on at this point. But retaining the ownership of property, people owning the land in America, is absolutely critical to winning this war on all fronts. So that's the message that I would leave, and just, you know, have people really understand how valuable it is, how precious it is. We're the only nation that has that respect for property rights and the protection for property rights. And when you put it in perspective, think about when our nation was founded. The most sophisticated form of transportation was horse and buggy. We're now, what, 253 years away into our, you know, founding from 1776. And we have now gone from putting a man on the moon, you know, airplanes are everywhere, satellites. I mean, when you think about how transportation, just that one industry, has absolutely exploded since America's founding. And I think That is because what America did was America gave people equal opportunity and the ability to be self-reliant and fulfill their dreams and to seek and become prosperous. And from that exploded human ingenuity, which has absolutely changed the world in less than 250 years. That is what our ability to have control over our own livelihoods through our ownership of property does for humanity. And that is what they are trying to take away.
Great stuff, Margaret. I appreciate you. I mean, to me, this is one of the most interesting topics that you could cover. The website, if people want to learn more?
Sure. It's AmericanStewards.us.
Okay. And so I encourage everybody to go there, check it out. If you're somebody in the western part of the country that's going through something similar to what Margaret went through and what the Bundys went through and so many people today are going through, reach out to her in that website and definitely learn more. Don't blow this one off. Margaret, thanks so much for joining me. And sooner or later, there's going to be another case popping up like the Bundys or like yours, and we'll be sure to ask you back. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for me. A very interesting conversation. I think the part of China taking over our property is something that every American, not just the people in Nevada or California or Utah or wherever those big, huge, rocky mountains and plains are, we have to worry about it throughout the United States. The plan for the Chinese is to take over the world. And in order to take over the world, you must take over the giant. And right now, we are the giant, but slowly but surely, the giant is being brought to its knees. Hopefully, we can get an administration back into the White House that recognizes what it is about America that makes America great. Because right now, we have forgotten it all. That's it from me. I appreciate your time. God bless you. God bless your family. God bless these United States. Please do not forget to download the DML News app. You can get it for free from the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. And you can make sure that you never miss one of these interviews or one of these videos if you are an app holder, if you're an app user. And of course, when you're there, think about joining Team DML. Team DML is a special place for where the app goes into sort of VIP mode and you get a lot of extras. You can check that out by going to the fifth tab on the DML News app. It's called the Interact tab. Go to the top where it says Team DML Memberships. Click it and then find out about all the programs that are there. That is it for me. Don't forget the DMLCBD.com site-wide BOGO. Buy one, get one free. Ends on March 31, and we will not have another one for a very, very long time. Do not miss out on products that can help you and your family, help you with boosting the immune system, tamping down on that anxiety, basically helping you sleep like nothing else ever, and bringing down the inflammation and getting rid of those aches and pains. That's it for me. Thank you, Margaret. God bless you and all your hard work. Make sure you have yourself a great day.
Get the Dennis Michael Lynch podcast every day by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and download the DML News app from the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store for breaking news, merchandise, films, exclusive content, and Team DML.